The trouble with CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure, as a treatment for sleep apnea is that according to some estimates, around half of people can't tolerate it and either use their CPAP machine irregularly or not at all. This is a huge issue since sleep apnea is underdiagnosed and affects at least 5% of adult Australians, a number that's growing with the obesity epidemic. That's led Danny Eckert, a senior research fellow at Neuroscience Research Australia, based at the University of New South Wales, to look for treatable factors influencing sleep apnea in addition to the usual problem of an abnormally narrow and collapsible upper airway. This might suggest alternatives to CPAP. And sure enough, Danny and his colleagues found three such factors.
It took us 5 years to do this study, and it's the most detailed physiological investigation of the causes of sleep apnea. Really, our goal was to bring people into the lab to do detailed physiological measurements over 3 or 4 separate nights. So it was really quite an invasive, intensive study.
So what were the range of causes you discovered?
So in addition to that anatomy measure, the collapsibility of the airway, and that was one of the interesting things that we found in this study, is that about 1/5 of patients actually had a similar collapsibility or anatomy to the controls.
So in other words, the people without sleep apnea, a very significant percentage of them had this collapsibility, but they didn't have any problems.
Exactly.
Which means that it's dubious, the relationship between that and sleep apnea in the first instance.
What it tells us is it's one but not the only factor.
So what's the other stuff?
So the other three non-anatomical causes, one was the muscles. So the upper airway is surrounded by over 25 little muscles, and we measured the electrical activity of those muscles during sleep to see how well they open the airway. The second one was awakening or arousal threshold, as we call it. Some people simply wake up too easily, and that can contribute to their sleep apnea.
Well, that sounds counterintuitive. They wake up too easily. You'd think that people with sleep apnea actually don't wake up, and that's the reason they have their problem. Their airway collapses before they get into strife.
This is one of the new observations from this line of investigation, is that 1/3 of the sleep apnea patients, in fact, wake up too easily to a little bit of airway narrowing, which we all get. Whereas, you're right, on the other extreme, there are other patients who really find it difficult to wake up during the night.
As their partners know.
Yeah, that's right.
And what's the consequence of waking up too easily if you've got sleep apnea?
So the consequence is that you have a constantly fragmented sleep. So you're awakening repetitively throughout the night, and that obviously disturbs sleep. And the second is, if you wake up too easily, you're unable to allow your muscles to naturally work to keep the airway open.
Oh, so they don't get a chance.
Correct. Yeah, there's not enough opportunity to make those muscles work. And the third one is, when you wake up from sleep, you have a big oscillation in breathing. So you take a big breath, and that blows off your carbon dioxide, and that can set you up for your next event. So they're the three main consequences of waking up too easily that feed into the cycle, that cyclical pattern of sleep disorder breathing.
So the final one there is, it's not a normal thing, it's an abnormal thing that you've got two, because you haven't been breathing properly during the night or since your last wake up, your carbon dioxide is built up in your bloodstream, you wake up and then you really got to take, you got to pant a bit to get rid of the carbon dioxide.
Exactly, and that was our third trait, which we call respiratory control.
Isn't that a good thing?
There's obviously a protective role in having some response to an increase in CO2, but what we found in this study was that some people have an overly sensitive response to that carbon dioxide. And for only a little reduction in CO2, they had an enormous breathing response, sometimes 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 times bigger than they should.
So in other words, their sleep apnea might be, to somebody observing it, exaggerated. It might not be as bad as it sounds because they're taking a huge gulp of breath when they might not need to.
That's exactly right. And then again, because of those changes in carbon dioxide, that sets them up for the next breathing event.
So what's the cart and what's the horse? Because you could have this abnormal abnormality in your throat, then you progress into your muscles not working very well, and you progress into this waking up, and then you progress into this big gulp of air, and it's all started from the anatomical abnormality because your neck's not right. Or it could all happen together. I mean, could it ever be that the big gulp of air is your problem and then that leads to sleep apnea?
No, I think fundamentally you have to have some degree of anatomical compromise to have sleep apnea.
So let's take an analogy, which is incontinence. Men suffer from incontinence as they get older, and it's not just their prostate. And it's the same reason why women tend to get more incontinence as they get older. The muscles don't work as well. The link between the brain and the muscles and the bladder and the sphincters don't work as well, and you tend to have incontinence. And you tend to blame it on other things, like you've got prolapse or you've got a prostate, but in fact, It's just the aging process. So let's just take the muscle bit. To what extent is the muscle problem in sleep apnea just an aging phenomenon that the brain's not connecting to the muscles that well anymore just because you're 75?
Yeah, if you combine some anatomical compromise with that muscle factor that you talked about, they are two factors that can set you up for sleep apnea. And you're right, maybe that is why some people get sleep apnea, because aging is certainly one of the biggest risk factors for sleep apnea. And there have been small mechanistic studies to show that the reflexes that keep the airway open are impaired with aging. And also some evidence to suggest that the muscles may not respond as well. So that could well be the factor.
And of the people that you studied with sleep apnea, how many had the full house? The anatomical abnormality, the problem in their muscles, the gulp of air and waking up frequently. In other words, did you have to have the full house, or you could have only some of them?
And that was really the main finding of the study, was that there were many different reasons on a per-patient basis. So you're right, there were some people that were extremely severe. They had terrible anatomy. They had bad loop gain, as we call it, respiratory control, bad muscles and bad awakening responses. They were relatively a minority. What we found is that 1/5 of patients had the same measurable anatomy or collapsibility of the airway as many of the controls, but those individuals had one or more non-anatomical causes, whereas the controls did not, so they were protected.
And did these other causes predict lack of ability to tolerate CPAP?
It's a really important question, and one that we have not yet answered.
So given that you found people who had collapsible airways but no sleep apnea, that assumes maybe that if you got rid of the other causes, you could actually do something about the sleep apnea. And what treatments might be available to fix up the muscles, to fix up the sleep awakening, to fix up the big gulp of air?
This is really one of the biggest things that came out of this detailed study, was that these data suggest that over 50% of patients could potentially be treated without CPAP therapy if you target one or more of the non or the abnormal traits with a combination of approaches. And those approaches are, so we're doing, this is all at the early stages, but for example, to reduce respiratory control, you can give oxygen therapy, or another drug called acetazolamide can stabilise those unstable breathing
patterns.
Those
swings in carbon dioxide.
Correct. So that's one approach to target that particular mechanism. The overly sensitive awakening, or the what we call a low arousal threshold, we're now doing detailed studies at Neura to investigate what certain sedatives or sleeping pills can affect or dampen down that response to stabilise breathing in those individuals. It's actually quite a counterproductive...
Counterintuitive. You wouldn't want to take a sedative if you've got sleep apnea, because could make you worse, but maybe carefully done with a certain type of one, it could work.
Yeah, look, and I think that's a really exciting area of investigation. Obviously, you need some of the older drugs, benzodiazepines, that will potentially relax the muscles are not going to work.
And this is not something to try at home by yourself.
No, very clearly not. And because there are certain patients that will get worse if you give them a sedative. So our approach is using this framework to find the ones that we think are going to get better and to deliver some of these novel therapies.
And is there a way of exercising the muscles?
Look, there are. There's been some interesting studies over the years that training may help. So somewhat surprisingly, a study of the didgeridoo out of Switzerland showed that there was some improvement in sleep apnea severity, published in the British Medical Journal.
So didge therapy.
That's right. And there are novel devices too, some implantable devices that stimulate the nerve to the largest upper airway dilator muscle, the genioglossus, that are currently under trial at the moment that may have some benefit in the appropriately selected individuals. And again, in addition to, there's also been a trial out of Brazil to show that if you get a speech pathologist to use certain training exercises, that can also have an effect in reducing sleep apnea severity.
By training the vocal muscles.
Yeah, and potentially there are, again, avenues for novel therapeutics to stimulate these muscles, but that area is really quite
so
a long
So do singers
way.
Get less sleep apnea?
Look, it's an interesting question, and there is very little published data on that question, but it's unclear at this stage, but worthy of investigation.
Can the system afford to do all the testing that's required to pick up these extra abnormalities? Because this is expensive stuff. You've got to go into a sleep lab. You've got to be attached to all sorts of wires. I mean, this sounds like very expensive interventions.
What we've done here is do the baseline detailed physiology study to set the framework. As you rightly point out, we need to get simplified measures in order to deliver individualized therapy for sleep apnea, and we have made some initial progress in that area where we can get these measurements on a single overnight study rather than doing 3 or 4 with detailed measurements.
Danny Eckert, thanks for joining us on the Health Report.
Thank you.
Danny Eckert, who's a senior research fellow at Neuroscience Research Australia, which is based at the University of New South Wales. I'm Norman Swan, and you've been listening to The Health Report. I'll see you next time.